Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DHK as I'm known, and three things up for review this week. First up, there's Kung Fu Panda 4, then there's the new Millie Bobby Brown film Damsel on Netflix, and finally, Ricky Stenicki, and yes, that is the real name of the film with John Cena and Zac Efron, and that one's on Amazon. First up is Kung Fu Panda 4, and I think the top question that I asked myself, and you should probably be asking yourself is, well, and also the filmmakers should have asked themselves, did we need a fourth Kung Fu Panda film? And I'm going to be brutally honest, the answer is no, we did not. Is this a terrible film? No, it's not terrible, but, you know, the story is starting to get a little tired and run its course. I think Jack Black is perfectly cast in this role. You know, clearly it is written for him. He is the thing that keeps it afloat. His, you know, ability to convey his natural, you know, real Jack Black joy into this panda animated character, I think, is the thing that prevents this from becoming a train wreck. However, I think they're probably aware it's time to retire this character, and they even start to flirt with that in the plot of this film, but then there's this fear of cutting off the cash cow, or cash panda in this case, and then, you know, it just feels like, why are we making this? And, you know, this is not a spoiler. The cast does not include the Furious Five who have been in the other films, so they have to awkwardly address that. And I think there's a reason these other folks haven't come back for this, because they realized there's no more story to tell here. Or the story to tell here is starting to get thinner and thinner. And if you are going to keep making these films, you know, you have to figure out what the future is. When they said they were making a Toy Story 4, for example, I was like, what have you done? I think the ending to Toy Story 3 is perfect. However, the progression of the world around them, and they found a way to hand off the characters and put them into a different set of circumstances that made sense and actually made the emotional journey worth it. Now, I couldn't tell you, if my life depended on it, what happened in Kung Fu Panda 3. I think I vaguely was able to put pieces together based on the fact that Bryan Cranston is a voice in this one again, and he plays Po's biological father effectively, but James Hong also returns as Mr. Ping, his goose dad, which I love. I think their dynamic is actually very fun. Dustin Hoffman did return as Shifu. Ian McShane actually comes back as Tai Lung, who is the villain in, I think, the first one. And then this time around, they are joined by Awkwafina, who plays Jen, who's a fox, I think. Ki-Hui Kwan, who plays Han, who I think is an armadillo. Some of the character designs in this are a little, like, vague animalish. And then our big bad is played by the one and only Viola Davis, who, you know, is amazing. She plays a chameleon sorceress. And I think the other problem with this film is, like, you know, it's one thing to bring back Ian McShane as Tai Lung and explain away how he's back, but the chameleon character just kind of comes out of nowhere, and, like, the villain motivation doesn't make sense, or it's just very dropped in. You know, I think if this had come out on streaming, we all would have gone, oh, yeah, all right, that's fine for that. But to have this be a theatrical release, I don't want to insult the film. It's fine. You know, I think if you're a little kid, you're going to enjoy it for the same reason you enjoy the other Kung Fu Panda films. You know, it's not going to tax you in that way. But if you're an adult, you're probably getting a little tired of these. It's an hour and a half. People in my theater were laughing, which, you know, good for them. I had a few chuckles, but I don't think they were, I think there were more esoteric chuckles. But, you know, I just, if there's not a story to be told that makes sense for this and that you feel compelled to tell with these characters, why are we continuing to tell it? That's my question. And why are we shying away from allowing these characters to progress and, like I said, potentially retire? You know, I think that fear makes them feel like they're just being, like, puppeted along and on life support, and the stories are never going to feel as compelling as something that's willing to come to a close. So if you are an adult with small children, yeah, this is a perfectly fine film to go take your kids to. I think, you know, it's short enough, it's vaguely entertaining enough. I think some of the choreography for the fights is pretty clever, although there are a lot of fights in an hour and a half movie. I would say probably a good 30 or 40 minutes of it are that, and it starts to get a little repetitive because there's only so much you can do. If you are an adult who just happens to be a huge Kung Fu Panda fan, you know, this is certainly in the vein of the other Kung Fu Panda movies, so you'll probably have a decent time. But if you are an adult who, you know, for whatever reason were thinking about this and don't have kids and just are like, oh, is this worth it? I'm going to go ahead and say you could either wait for it to go on streaming or just not watch it at all. I think the best thing to come out of this is Jack Black / Tenacious D's cover of Hit Me Baby One More Time, which is the credit song. And that should tell you something about the, although, you know, obviously Tenacious D, amazing vocalist, an amazing performer. So, but yeah, I just, I don't want to say it was phoned in, but it felt hollow in a way that just made me a little bit bummed. And I did see Kung Fu Panda 3, but I don't remember. I probably had a similar feeling at that one, and just a feeling of like, why don't we just stop? You know, why don't we focus our attentions on new things that we haven't seen before, new characters who we're ready to tell the stories of? I do think, you know, I would have been okay if we'd focused a little more, and they do start to have this as a plot, but like, I like the dynamic between Bryan Cranston and James Hong as like his two dads. I think that was fun. And, you know, they do pepper that in. And I think that kind of kept it sort of moving along for me. But the rest of it just felt pretty cookie cutter, or I guess fortune cookie cutter. I'm not sure, that's a terrible joke. But, you know, it's not terrible. It's just not anything exciting. And I think it's getting a little tired. But I'm going to give it a 3.2 out of 5. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back. And I'm back. The next thing I have this week is called Damsel, and it's a new Netflix original film, and I'm pretty vocal about being wary of these Netflix movie of the week. It's tough, you know, but this one has Millie Bobby Brown, who I do think has been in some pretty decent entries into this Netflix universe. I thought Enola Holmes is good, you know, even the second one was fine, and so I was like, okay. And it's also the writer-director of 28 Weeks Later, which is a sort of unexpected kind of pairing for the two of them. So I was like, yeah, right, I'll give it a chance. Also, it has Angela Bassett, Robin Wright, and Ray Winstone. And I'm going to, you know, give you a caveat. I'm not going to call it a spoiler, but I'm going to give you a caveat that the rest of them are, generally speaking, you know, glorified cameos. So if you're prepared to watch for them, don't, because that's not what it's about. I like that Millie Bobby Brown is getting involved in these sort of flipping, gender role flipping, etc. films. The story of Damsel is basically, you know, this young princess? I don't think she's a princess. Yeah, this young girl basically agrees to marry a prince because her kingdom is in dire need, and it's financially advantageous for her to get married off, so she agrees to it. And then they find out, and this is, again, this happens in the first few minutes, that she's a sacrifice to a fire-breathing dragon that lives in a cave. Voiced by Shora Agdishulu, which, you know, good get there. The animation on the dragon isn't terrible, actually. The CG on everything else, though, is pretty bad. I know what they're going for with this. I think they're trying to capture that same thing that Enola Holmes did, where you have this strong female lead in a role that, you know, is, she's no longer a damsel in distress, or, you know, the idea of like, oh, she's a Sherlock Holmes level person, or she's like Sherlock Holmes' sister, but she's just as smart, you know. Basically, she is a independent, strong character. But this movie's so boring, and you want to talk about cookie cutter. This is just, like, you, I'm not even going to say it, but you know what the twist is already. And the action is minimal, if that. I think Millie Bobby Brown is fine, but it doesn't feel like the best showcase of her acting, or it's all things we've seen from her before. And, you know, like I said, the rest of the folks are cameos. Robin Wright is great. Angela Bassett, I don't know what she's doing there. She's great, but, like, it's just, I was like, she deserves so much better than this role. Robin Wright is probably the best in this. I don't know. And then Nick Robinson plays like the prince who, whatever, who cares? Yeah, I gave it a chance. I think maybe if you're like a huge Millie Bobby Brown fan and probably on the younger side, maybe you'll enjoy this film. But if you are anybody outside of that demographic, I'm going to say, go ahead and save your time and energy. I won't even say money, because you already subscribed to Netflix if you're watching this. But this is a 2 out of 5 for me, and I think that's being generous. The last film I have this week is called Ricky Stenicki. And yes, I know that does not sound like a real movie title. And this is, it's just, oh man, the things I will do to support John Cena, who does not need my support, but I'm just a big John Cena fan. So I don't dislike the premise behind this film. The idea is that these three childhood friends invent this, you know, scapegoat character who they can blame all of, you know, anything bad on. It's Ricky Stenicki's fault. And that idea is, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had with this. This is directed by Peter Farrelly, who, I'd like to remind you, directed the Oscar-winning Green Book, which I have beef with the fact that that won an Oscar. But he's also, there's something about Mary, Dumb and Dumber, Kingpin. You know, Peter Farrelly knows comedy. I also think John Cena is very funny. I think he is excellent in comedic roles. It has Zac Efron. It has Jermaine Fowler, Andrew Santino, Jeff Ross, William H. Macy. So I was like, okay, you know, I'm willing to give this a chance. It looks funny enough. And then, of course, you know, childhood friends have this character who they continue to use into their adult lives. And then finally, the jig is up and they need this person to materialize. So they hire an actor who is John Cena's character to play Ricky Stenicki. And then there are unintended consequences. And you know, if you've seen the trailers for this, you see, you get to see John Cena in all these like absurd costumes, or if you've seen any of that stuff involved, right? You know, you see him in all these absurd costumes and all that stuff. That part, it's very gimmicky and it's funny. It feels more like an SNL bit than part of a plot, but they definitely try and milk that a lot. I think this is a okay background watch because at a certain point I had to turn my brain off. And so I was not gonna lie, I was multitasking. It's trying to strike this balance of earnest, funny, and also vulgar. And it's really hard to do that. And I don't think it succeeds, but it's trying. And there are occasional moments where it shines through in one of those three pillars. But the triforce of that is just, it doesn't quite work. I'm going to go ahead and guess that the memes and like the behind the scenes footage of this film are going to way outlive any impact this film has on society. I didn't have a terrible time watching it, but it's also because I just started doing other things during, but I did have it on and I did pay enough attention to it. I could tell you what happens. I'm not going to, just in case you feel like watching it. But, you know, if you want to just really turn your brain off, this could work. You know, I'm not saying it's good, but if you are really just desperate to do that, I'm not going to say don't, but I'm not going to say do. That's where I will do it. If you are a super fan of John Cena, like I am somehow, you know, if you want to support him, it's a choice. You know, I also, you know, Zac Efron is funny. Jermaine Fowler is funny. It's just, it's too bad because there are so many pieces of this. And there are moments where it's amusing enough and not necessarily overly crude and overly vulgar. And there are emotional moments where I'm like, oh, there was potentially a good movie in here. I feel like they got swept up in something. And I don't know if it was a fear of not being vulgar enough because it's billed as an R-rated comedy, or not being earnest enough. And there are moments I was like, oh, I like that this is combating toxic masculinity. And then they'll immediately undo that with like a semi-homophobic joke, but then they'll diffuse the joke. So, you know, it's all over the place. It's exactly what it appears to be. It's nothing more, it's nothing less. So, you know, if you want to risk it, that is up to you. I'm going to give it a 2.3 out of 5, probably being a little bit generous, but, you know, it was what it was. That has been it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a review, or even consider subscribing.